Welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Have you ever wondered about things like Bitcoin, investing in the share market, or buying investment properties? Often the hardest thing about creating wealth is simply making a start. Making a start begins with learning. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is all about helping the everyday Kiwi create wealth through investing. None of this should be considered financial advice, but I do hope it gets you thinking. Let's get started. Hey, it's your host, Darcy Ungaro. You're listening to the NZ Everyday Investor. Today, we're meeting with Dean Anderson from a new company called Kernel Wealth. They're one of a growing number of online digital solutions that will help DIY self-directed investors play the game at investing. I'm into this sort of thing because I can see that these platforms are doing a tremendously good job of serving a community that personalized financial advisors will likely never sit in front of. And so it's a great way to provide a low friction, easy on-ramp to investing. So Dean and I are just going to have a chat. No major discussion points that we're talking to. We're just having a general chat, and I hope you enjoy this. And if you haven't done so already, make sure that you've subscribed to the show before you go any further. We've got some really cool shows coming up before the end of this year. Enjoy. Welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor. I'm Darcy Ungaro. I'm sitting with Dean Anderson from Kernel. Welcome. Thanks for coming in. Do you want to just maybe start by telling us how you fit into this world of investing and what makes you passionate about what you're doing?
Yeah, so I've had a background working at New Zealand Stock Exchange. It was my sort of second job out of university, a finance degree, and really obviously built quite a strong interest in the capital markets. My background there involved working in our indices team and also in the funds management arm, where I sort of started to build that exposure and awareness of passive investing and index investing.
I want to break down for our listeners what it means to be investing in an index. Can you just help me understand that?
Yeah, so an index is basically a representation of a number of listed securities, be it, you know, it could be equities or bonds. And so a common example would be the US 500 or the NZX 50. People regularly hear those referenced on the news. Mm. And they really just started as originally as a benchmark for summarizing how the market went in a day rather than reporting on every individual security. The NZX 50, for example, is made up of the 50 largest listed companies, and they each have a weighting that's in that index based on the size of the company. And we simply run a fund that tracks that. So we buy and hold the assets in the same proportion that they are in the index.
So when you're buying an index, you're not necessarily buying shares in all those companies directly. You're buying shares in a fund that
So an investor that comes to us is buying units in our fund, and then subsequently we go and buy all of the underlying companies in proportion to what they are represented in the index.
And is it one-to-one, or do you use leverage sometimes, or do you just do some of the NZX 50, like some of them, or all?
No, so there are multiple strategies, actually. So you are globally, you do have, you know, leverage funds, obviously, that may have multiple times of leverage into that. Yeah. There is also an approach called sampling. So if you think about like a total world index fund, that total world index may actually have 10,000 companies in it. Yeah. But an index fund manager realizes, well, buying each of those 10,000 companies, at some point, you're probably not adding value.
Yeah.
So they will do a sampling approach. They may hold 6,000 rather than 10,000. But locally for us, with the three products that we've launched, we represent and replicate the index 100%. So we buy and hold all of the assets, one for one, as they are weighted in the index.
Okay. So you founded Kernel.
Yeah.
Tell me about what led up to that. Why did you do it?
So I spent a few months off work last year. As with many things, you start having conversations and you start speaking to, you know, old industry connections and thinking about what you're going to do next. And we started talking and realized that there was a space in the market to do things differently. When you've got that blank sheet of paper, how would you design a better model to give investors greater choice and better products that are going to deliver on long-term investment outcomes for them? So that kind of was the background to it, and then spent a number of months designing it and going through all the regulatory hurdles that we needed to go through, and then we finally launched in August.
Well done. So you're brand spanking new.
We are brand spanking new. We've been live to the public now for 16 days.
Wow. Yeah. Nervous?
No, it's going great. Feedback's been amazing.
That's good.
Trading's going fantastic. You know, we've just really enjoyed the engagement that we've had with both sort of independent investors across the country and also financial advisors.
Yes. So. Yeah, well done. Okay, and we'll come back to that because I'm interested in your model in particular because I was quite keen to see that, yeah, there was some linkage there with financial advisors. So I want to pick that apart a little bit more. Instead of just going back into the corporate world, though, you decided to do this. You saw a need. Do you see that there's a trend here, or are there any trends that you're capitalizing on with starting this?
An obvious trend that we've seen globally is the shift towards index investments. So retail investors and wholesale investors across the globe are now having an increasing portion of their portfolios held in index funds. If you look at the US market, rough figures, approximately sort of 25-30% of the entire US market is held in index funds. Okay. If you bring that locally, we're approximately 2.5%.
Really?
So
is that right? Because with all that you hear about, you just assume that it must be quite popular here as well.
Yeah, it's obviously grown in awareness a lot in the last couple of years,
but
we're still really lagging behind global trends. And funny enough, what's interesting about that is we were actually the fourth country in the world to launch ETFs or index funds, exchange-traded funds, sorry. We were well ahead of the curve back in the 90s, but when we really didn't progress from there.
Yeah.
So we're starting to catch up a bit now, and there's obviously growing awareness of the value of index investing.
Yeah.
But we are still a long way behind, so there are a number of New Zealanders out there who are really missing out on those benefits.
Right. The other trend, obviously, that you're capitalizing on is this move towards DIY or self-directed investing.
Yes, and I think DIY has shifted a lot compared to what we'd probably think of back in, say, the 80s, where there was a lot of DIY stock picking, hot tips from friends. Everybody was out there just trying to take a punt. Where now we've got a shift towards more sophisticated DIY investing. People are understanding asset allocations, and then they want a long-term exposure. They're not speculating, they're actually investing. So we're excited to see that is occurring. And it's also driven by a number of social and demographic changes. Right. So particularly in that younger space, sub-baby boomers, there's a lot less interest in investment properties. Right. So we don't have that same DIY affiliation with wanting to own half a dozen investment properties, managing the complexities of that and fixing pipes and painting rooms and bad tenants and all those sort of things. We're living really busy lives. We're typically working more corporate jobs. So we want something that we can manage our wealth through and still accumulate towards those long-term financial goals, but it needs to be in a more accessible format.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there, right? Like there's the fact that the property market is almost too inaccessible now.
Oh, look, think about what you need, 40% deposit on an investment property. You know, we are talking
30 now, but still,
30,
it's nuts, yeah.
But it's still hundreds of thousands of dollars in most cases for somebody to come up with.
Usually their parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's the thing, right? It's that older generation has been involved in that.
That's right.
And regulations are changing, taxation is changing. So there is definitely a lot more complexity and declining interest in that asset
there
class.
There is. And it's also the fact that maybe if I was of a younger generation, and not to beat up on the younger generation, which you are probably likely a member of compared to myself, but fixing the broken pipes and dealing with tenants and, that's not really for everybody, right? And I think for the younger generation, maybe they haven't learned how to fix a broken pipe. Like I know I was probably on the edge. I had to Google it.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Look, we're busy trying to keep up with gymming, managing our corporate life, a social life,
that's right.
Not eating the wrong thing, all these other aspects that are coming into our lives. It's we're living very busy lives. So to then be thinking about, going and fixing the pipe and learning how to be hands-on,
That's right.
Impossible.
Yeah, and there's a certain sort of beauty around kind of just putting that on over here. You guys sort it all out. I'm happy to pay a small fee for the actual work that you're doing, the tax obligations, the reporting, the asset allocation, that sort of stuff. Right?
And I think it's also important to highlight, we all know how successful the Auckland property market has been.
Yeah.
But if you actually look at the data, the NZX 50 actually outperformed the Auckland property market.
Yeah.
The big difference, though, is obviously leverage. That is the only difference.
That's the elephant in the room, right? Yeah.
If you were willing to go and put 10-1 bet on the equity markets, you would be better off.
Yeah.
But we're very comfortable taking significant leverage and putting into a property.
Yeah.
Not so much when it comes to equities and other assets.
And there's something very Kiwi about seeing the tangible, right?
Yeah,
and taking a risk on what you can see.
And you don't know what the value is every day. So that's the other thing.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not seeing every day that, oh, no, my house value has fallen 0.5%. I've lost $50,000.
Sell everything.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have that same ability to monitor that on a daily basis. That is changing.
Yeah.
There are a number of increasing apps like CoreLogic and Homes.co.nz, those sort of places where you can go and get slightly more updated information. And, I suspect as that increases, that may also change our attitudes towards property.
Oh, totally. And I think that the other change will happen is not just the transparency and the visibility of real-time pricing, but it's also the ability to fractionalize property and sell tranches of it off and buy it. That's going to happen as well. But it's that theme around friction. Friction is sometimes needs to be removed. Friction sometimes needs to be left alone because it's our best, worst enemy to have to keep us from ourselves, right?
Correct.
And we'll come back to that. But going back to this rise in index investing, and maybe New Zealand is just kind of playing catch up right now. From your perspective, and I want you to kind of think about this not just as your role with Kernel and what you founded here, but just think about this from a macro perspective with where we're at. And I don't want to focus on the short term because there's always short term events. Looking at the environment right now with this on again, off again trade war situation, all these other things. And I know there's always things to consider, which are always right in front of us. Is now the good time to be investing in vehicles that have, for argument's sake, no one at the steering wheel?
Yeah, two parts to that question. One is a timing of the market question, and the other is actually the active versus passive debate.
Cool.
So those are the two components. The timing of the market, we typically say, for most people, the best time to get in the market was yesterday. The second best time is now. If you've got a long-term investment horizon, the idea that you can time the market and you can pick the next downturn is near impossible. And we've actually done a lot of research looking into this, and we've got a piece coming out soon that looks at a local example. And it reinforces that it is impossible to pick the bottom and get that timing right. You're actually better off putting your money in the market and sticking in the market or having a regular contribution into the market, that dollar cost averaging.
Yeah.
Then the second part is obviously the active versus passive debate. There's significant research, both locally and globally, that looks at this in short-term and long-term environments and also in bull and bear markets, the ups and downs. And majority of that research shows that it is very hard for an active manager to consistently outperform an index fund. And that data actually is consistent even in downturns. So back to the timing element, what you'll typically see is active managers just are not able to time the market right. Like everybody else, we can never quite predict the exact moment things are going to change, either up or down.
And you can always tell when it has been,
but
no one can really see what will be.
Yeah.
And I know this is a theme that we've covered on this podcast, not to death yet, but quite a few times. And I love kind of oscillating between these two points of view because I can see both sides of this. Maybe it's a question of, in a season, you could do one or the other. But again, that kind of defeats the whole purpose of passive, which is everything rises on an incoming tide.
There has been some data that, there are maybe short windows in some markets or some environments. There's no consistency with the data either. If you think about the downturns as well, they're often always caused by a different factor. So recessions and market downturns, it's not the same thing causing them every time. So you don't have that same historical view as well to leverage off. So it is brand new for everybody every time. But there may be short-term windows, but again, for investors that are looking for long-term, it's a very hard argument to make against index investing.
And the more time that goes on, the more data that's there.
Yeah.
The argument for passive investing is that given a long enough time horizon, fund managers can't outperform the index.
Correct. And that's even as short as 1 year. So there's a great research piece done every 6 months called SPIVA, which is basically S&P
Indices. How do you spell that?
SPIVA. It's S&P Indices versus Active.
Okay.
And it looks at all the global markets, Australia, Europe, South America, South Africa, US, and it basically looks at the performance of active funds, every active fund versus the index, relevant index as well, that is. So you might have like a large cap fund and a small cap fund, and they're compared to comparative indices. And if you look at that data across all markets, so the latest results just came out for Australia, 80% or more underperform an index over a 5-year period. Now, they've got that data going back 10, 15, and 20-year periods in markets like the US and Australia.
Yeah.
Even on a 1-year period, it's typically somewhere in the region of 70 to 80% underperform even on a 1-year basis. There's that element. There's also what's quite interesting is the persistence element. So there's another piece of research they produce, and this is looking at how consistently can an active manager outperform, because that's the next part of it. So you find a manager that's outperformed for 1 year.
Yeah.
Are they going to do it for the next year? The percentage of active funds that are in the top half of funds performance, the percentage that are still in the top half 5 years later, and i.e. so they've been consistently in that top half for 5 years in a row, is less than 10%.
Wow.
So
okay. So what you're saying is you might be able to fool me once.
Yeah. But you can't consistently do it. And that's the challenge. And this is this whole point around this long-term investing. And particularly it's important for those DIY investors to not get drawn in by those short-term performances, to be distracted by the sales tactics or anything else that may be out there. It's taking that long-term view.
A few times you've said that long-term thing, right?
And, correct.
Yep. And I think when I look at my profession as well, it's going to shift between, I guess, going back, like you said, 20, 30 years ago, it was more stock pickers and trying to be really smart and clever about it and really probably not really doing much with it. Now it really is about long-term thinking, planning, good design, good discipline.
Correct.
Staying the course. That's what the role of an advisor would be going forward, right?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, advisors now, you can get access to financial advice across the country, and there's been this big shift towards this, what they call asset allocation approach. So it's looking at how much do you want to have in equities and where do you want that to be, for example. So we're going to put, 60% in equities for you. Part of that is going to go into New Zealand markets, US markets, and getting that allocation right.
Yeah.
That is the core driver of the performance for those clients.
Yeah.
There's been that big shift away from stock picking and individual securities making up those client portfolios.
And what else then? So what would you see a good advisor doing going forward? Obviously, they would help with the asset allocation bit. What else would an advisor ideally be doing for their clients?
Yeah, the big thing is the emotional element, right? It's keeping them to course. That's when they really come into their own. We have a market correction. Emotionally, we panic. We're human, and we think, oh, God, I want to get out of that now. It's falling. I'm going to stop it now. So we may shift all of our money out, sell down, and go to cash. It's probably the worst thing to do. And so advisors are there to really help you with those tough decisions and really assist in those sort of really tough emotional moments where we may want to do something that's actually not in our best interest.
Yeah, that's a tough one though, isn't it?
It's very tough.
Because we always want someone just to do what we want them to do. And so your view on what that professional is supposed to be doing needs to be calibrated before you begin to work with them to start
correct.
With, right?
And advisors are great for that. I think we've seen that big shift now. Advisors are really focused on setting you up for those moments, making it very clear what you're getting into. And that's part of that risk assessment that they'll go through with you to understand what is your risk profile. Are you conservative, balanced, sort of that growth type mindset, outlining the possibilities and really trying to assess how you're going to react in those moments. That just feeds into getting you prepared for what will inevitably at some point a period where your portfolio does go down.
And it will. It will.
Exactly.
Like in any 10-year period, it will have some down years, and in those down years, how are you going to cope with that? You have to be really honest with yourself, right?
Because
when it actually happens, it's like getting the flu.
Yeah.
Being a man, you are dying every single time you get the flu.
Oh, exactly. And you may be back on your feet in a week, but it was a horrible moment.
That's right. And you can never really see it, right, when it's happening to you. And the same thing when there's been a massive pullback and things have gone back more than people really expected for reasons they didn't see coming. This time it's different. I need to get out. Take me to a place of safety.
And we do have to, you have to weigh it up, and it's always hard to predict as well. The GFC was pretty unprecedented. That was quite a material fall in markets globally. So I think some of us have that in the back of the mind, that is what the next fall may look like. But equally, there are a number of smaller corrections that's probably the more typical norm of that 10 to 20% range rather than losing half of your portfolio.
Yeah, some extremists would probably say that was just the beginning, right? Or that was just a precursor of what's to come. But really, it's going to be different every single time, isn't it?
And yeah, look, all downturns are caused by different factors. And I think we've sort of talked about that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have that foresight as to what's going to cause them. And so that makes it really hard to understand and try and pick timing of the market.
Okay. So, Dean, if you were to say, hey, this is what Kernel is about, what would you say?
Yeah, so we're really focused on giving New Zealanders the products and tools they need so that they're going to achieve those long-term financial goals. Okay. You know, we're here to help them set themselves up for the future, continue to fund their retirement and their future lifestyle. So we've designed at the moment three New Zealand equity index funds, and we've really thought about the product design to make sure that that is the most efficient model possible for those investors to start saving towards their future.
Okay. Overseas, I just want to take a little bit of a tangent here and talk about robo-advice.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree that overseas you'd see robo-advice developing a little bit more, and New Zealand has kind of been keeping up a little bit, but we've got a long way to go to catch up? What's happening?
There's definitely been there's a longer history, obviously, of robo-advice offshore. You know, we've only just really started to see legislative changes come in here that actually enable robo-advice in New Zealand. Whereas you look at the US, you've got companies that have been in play for a number of years now, your Betterments and your Wealthfronts. These all founded originally on very simple models. It was a simple risk profiling, and they will put you into a couple of buckets of pre-made portfolios for you.
Yeah.
But there has been an evolution, and obviously as those solutions evolve and they get that feedback from the customers, one of the things we have seen is those that are becoming more successful are those that are actually bringing back in human advisors. Okay. So the problem with robo typically is that you still have that emotional element to it. You're still in control. You can still push the button. If the portfolio starts going down and the markets go down or you read a bad headline, you can still go into the air and say, I'm out. And it may be the worst decision for you. So again, bringing that human element back into it, you'll pay a typical premium for it, but you'll have somebody you can call to.
Right.
And I think that's part of the growing trend is that kind of hybrid solution.
Which is interesting because to me, it kind of almost seems backwards. You know what I mean? Like I would have assumed that the robots are coming to take my job.
Yeah.
And now that they've taken my job, they're not going to give it back to me. But it kind of feels like that. And I know that's a weird way of saying it, but I guess it's kind of rounding out the whole kind of experience, isn't it?
Because correct. It was probably a little shift too far one way, and then it's sort of coming back to that middle. There's always going to be need for that human touch, that human element to understand your problems, the nuances that you have, and how you react to certain situations.
Yeah.
It's very hard to capture that digitally. But what you as an advisor get as well is a far more efficient business. So you can focus on the things that really matter, and it's that human engagement, understanding your clients, and keeping them to course in those potentially volatile periods.
It would be kind of like if you had a cholesterol problem and you went to the doctor and the doctor ordered a bunch of blood tests and they came back and they show you triglycerides and all that sort of stuff. That's kind of, I guess, from the GP's perspective, they need to send you away to get some bloods done to figure out what's wrong with you so they can adequately treat you and what are the options available. That's kind of maybe how this is going to work, right? Where there's some tools out there that will flush out and unlock and do a lot of the heavy lifting, so to speak, like onboarding, for example.
Onboarding. AML is obviously a big one. Yep. Gone are the days where you need to be filling out a whole bunch of paper forms with getting your ID certified and trying to find a, justice of the peace to book a time to do all of that sort of work, right? You can do that digitally now. And that good is the riddance. Mundane part of the job that, we do just want to get done and out of the way.
If all those points of friction can be removed, it's in everybody's best interest that they get removed. But then let's actually really drill down and magnify the value that could actually be delivered if there was a human giving some insight, right?
And just on that, I think, removing that friction, you got to think about this has seen a material shift in the market. The number of new investors coming into the space who previously thought they were locked out, right? It wasn't for them. This idea that it is for the elite or those that have a significant amount of money, that's gone now thanks to digital. We know that anybody on the street can actually start investing and they can start accumulating towards, their future goals. So that is a big benefit that this digitization of the investment landscape has had.
Yeah. The whole move to digital has really unlocked this space and equalized it. some people have said the democratization of investing. Yep. Probably a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Like a lot of people have been locked out because they didn't have enough to actually play the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite passionate about the part where people don't play the game because they feel like they're not smart enough.
Correct. But I think we've got to play our role in so for us at Kernel, we've really focused on trying to educate our customer base as well. We're not going to shy away from some of that jargon, but we want to help you learn and understand what it is.
Yeah.
So that when you continue to go out there and you continue to read things and do your research, you're going to be better informed so you can make good investment decisions.
Good.
And it isn't overly complicated. We do like to oversell the theories of things. But most of the language, when you boil it down, there's not too much in there. You'll learn a few key things and then you can build from there over time.
Yeah.
And just get in and start experiencing it.
We've caught up with InvestNow, with Sharesies, with Hatch, now you. The landscape where you're playing in, is it becoming crowded, in your opinion, in New Zealand?
Oh, definitely not. Look, so there's a huge New Zealand marketplace out there that is still underserved. We talked about earlier the percentage of investors that have, you know, the market that's held in index funds.
Yeah.
It is a fraction of what it is in offshore markets. And there are other pieces of data that back that up. You know, you've got declining home ownership rates. There's $50 billion at the moment sitting in on-call checking accounts, earning New Zealanders less than 1%.
Crazy, isn't it?
And there's actually another $70 billion just sitting in everyday New Zealanders' checking accounts. So between all of us sitting in our room right now, there's a little bit of money that's sitting in there doing
nothing.
Right. You're right. And so if we can help those New Zealanders do something a little bit more, that's great. But we've really focused equally on product innovation. So we're excited to be bringing new funds to market that are going to give people a growing range of choices to help them achieve their long-term goals.
Okay. So what makes Kernel different then to some of the other offerings out there?
Yeah, we've made sure that our investors have that fully digital experience. We want to make sure that they can access our products really easily and online. I guess the core to it is we do view each of our customers as unique. They've got unique risk tolerance, unique goals and objectives. So we wanted to build a range of products that they can customize to meet that goal.
Yeah.
And part of that is building new index funds. And so, you know, for example, we've launched our Level 9 fund, and that's the first ever index fund to invest outside of the top 50 largest companies. Okay. So it's trying to bring that product innovation to market.
In the next little while, what's happening in that space? So we've got three funds at the moment.
NZ20.
NZ20.
A New Zealand Commercial Property Fund and our Level 9 fund.
Right. And you chose those funds because you felt like that would obviously satisfy the needs of the many. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. So NZ20, that's actually an index that's been around for a while. It's quite an interesting index. It's actually significantly outperformed the NZ50 index, but it kind of flies under the radar.
Okay.
And then actually what we wanted to do was, that kind of is that, from a jargon term here now, that sort of blue chip exposure. You know, say large corporates, utilities, those sort of exposures.
The NZX9?
NZ20, that top 20. That's the big, large companies.
Yeah.
Then to complement that, we wanted to build a sort of more small cap growth type fund.
Yeah.
And so we worked with S&P to develop a new index, and that's what's called the S&P NZX Emerging Opportunities Index.
Yeah.
Long-winded name, but basically it's this index that captures smaller growth companies. And so that's a great sort of complement for people that are looking for a different exposure, something that historically small caps typically have an outperformance. So, there are a number of companies in there, fintech companies like Userco and Pushpay, that have reasonable growth periods. And so we wanted to wrap that up in a nice diversified index that investors can get in a single purchase.
And the commercial, I like the commercial property one.
Commercial property,
as well,
yeah.
Because a lot of property investors that I speak to, they're in the residential space primarily. And quite often they'll try to break out into commercial but get knocked back because sometimes it's even more capital hungry.
And very, very much so.
It's not the right time for them for whatever reason, but this is a great way to scale in, right?
Correct. Look, you can access it with as little as $100. So it is a great, easy product to get into the commercial property space. It holds 8 of the listed property trusts on the New Zealand Stock Exchange.
All in New Zealand, right?
Yep. So collectively, they own about 300 properties across New Zealand, be it hospitals to local community developments and different commercial sectors. That space in general, historically, probably people have looked towards either buying some of those directly on market. Equally, some people may be buying into property syndicates, which are great. They do sell investors on their high yield, but you know, you don't have the ability typically to get in or out very easily as well. So
liquidity
issues come into play with those.
Correct. And I've even seen some of these in the residential space come and potentially go. Because liquidity is number one, right? You've got to be really careful when you're looking at that.
And those are some of the things we talk about. So we've got a blog series at the moment we've been doing. First one we looked at was Horizon. What is your investment horizon? Helping investors understand how long am I looking to invest this money for and when do I need the money back? Because that's the first and foremost question. That's the key question to understand. Do I need my money in 2 years, 5 years? And how flexible am I on that as well? Because that's the other thing. We may put a number in the line, but actually, if we got to that point and realized we could move another year, then you need to factor that in as well. And so the second part that we've released is liquidity, looking at understanding liquidity of the investment decisions you're making. So obviously cash, you know, ready to go right now versus, you know, property syndicates or investment property directly even, where you may have months before you could get out of that asset and huge costs associated with it as well.
That's right. When somebody's signing up on the platform, is there a questionnaire? Is there some sort of process that helps investors to figure out what kind of investor they are?
Not during the sign-up process, but we do give links to that. There are a number of tools like on Sorted as well where you can go and understand what your risk profile is.
Mm.
And then really
highly recommended, yeah.
Yeah, it is a great source to go and like get started to learn where you think you sit in the market.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, what we really try to do is give investors plenty of information around what the products are, what the risk profile is, and support that with a number of blogs and educational pieces so that they can really understand where these fit within a potential portfolio and how they may work for them.
Good. All right. And so when there's a digital offering, when it's an online investment platform, you just kind of assume that you're left to your own. And I know you're speaking about education and writing blogs and all that sort of stuff, but sometimes you do need to have a human there. And I know that people can probably call and talk to a real person, but you guys are a little bit unique, or what I think is a bit unique in this space, in that you do have the ability to have an advisor introduce you to the platform and work with you, right?
Yeah. So I guess if people want to access our funds, there are a couple of channels that obviously somebody can come to us and sign up directly online and start managing their investments.
Yeah.
All of the funds are equally available through financial advisors across the country. So if they are currently working with a financial advisor, those advisors can access it either through their own platforms or can help manage and give guidance on the products that may be in ours. So there are a couple of advisors out there that recommending client portfolios and putting together portfolios for you, and you know, they research our products as part of that.
That's quite cool. Awesome. Is there anything that you see in the next 12 months that you're trying to really perfect and to work on? Like, it looks to me like the platform looks pretty good already as it is, but what are you kind of thinking about?
No, we do have a number of features rolling out even over the next few months. So you're going to see a number of new features launched within the dashboard itself for those DIY retail investors. Yeah. And we'll continue to get feedback from our customers, both the financial advisor market and direct retail, on what funds that we want to develop next as well. So obviously at the moment we've got New Zealand equities, but we need to grow that out over time for our customers.
Would that involve going overseas?
Could do. I guess it depends on what our customers ask for. We'll prioritize where we think we can add value. Part of that as well is the same process we went through when we launched Kernel itself was really looking at the market and going, how do we build a better product? So as soon as we go into offshore markets, then you have a lot of complexities around taxation and custody costs and foreign exchange.
Mm.
So we will spend quite a bit of time looking to make sure that we get the right models for anything that we do. And we did that specifically with when we launched the three New Zealand funds as well.
When you say that you look at the market, how do you look at the market?
It's looking at that total cost of ownership for a customer is a big thing. You know, fees obviously play an important part in investors' long-term returns.
Yeah.
And that is not just the management fee. It is taxation and trading costs and, you know, any custody charges and those sort of assets.
Mm.
So all those aspects we weigh up and try and build a model that we think is more efficient for our customers.
Got it. Yep. So when you look at the market, obviously, I guess there could be a bit of research involved, but also you're looking at the competitors and seeing what they're doing well, what they're not doing well, what they're leaving on the table. Is that kind of how you've done it?
Yeah, correct. And it's also working within the legislation, right? So there are a number of changes that come in place. Recently, we obviously had the tax working group. So it's making sure that you're across all of those bits of information, that you're designing a product that is fit for purpose and going to help customers get that long-term outcome that they're after.
And do you see any threats to the space that you're working in, or is it kind of like it's a new frontier and it's just ripe for the picking?
There are a number of threats, you know, with any business and in any sector. People may start to be turned off from equity markets. Probably the thing we'd be most concerned about is investors start to look at alternatives or they choose not to invest. That's probably the biggest risk for New Zealand itself, is Kiwis out there deciding just to sit on the money in their bank and not do anything with it. Outside of that, we're just excited to be growing this category. You know, we want to continue to see passive grow in New Zealand. So we want to see more product innovation, more products come to market so that we can take the market share of passive from 2.5% closer to what you may see in other markets.
Which is what? Closer to what?
If you look at the US market, 25% of the market is in index funds.
Yeah.
Australia, it's probably in between that 10-15% range. Yeah. So we're lagging behind Australia, and New Zealand investors are missing out because of that.
Why? I still can't get my head around, why is it so low?
It really is. I think just we've been very slow at moving towards this. You know, if you think about other factors at play, KiwiSaver has come to market a lot later than what the equivalent in Australia came to market. So we're only starting to see this interest in capital markets build again. You know, we have had a fixation with property for a long period of time. And that was driven by the baby boomers who dominated the market from an investing perspective.
So it is our parents' fault then?
Yeah.
It's just so much easier if we can just blame someone. So yeah, let's just blame it on our parents.
We'll blame it on the parents. Yeah. But outside of that, now we're seeing the growing awareness of the benefit of investing in capital markets and having exposure to equities and other things in a portfolio may mean for you as an investor over the long term.
So that awareness piece is obviously really important.
Yeah, and KiwiSaver is growing, awareness is growing, and on the back of that, we should start to see more innovation, more choice, and more Kiwis taking advantage of investing. You know, as we talked about earlier, thanks to digitization, it's really easy now for everyday New Zealanders to get involved.
Yeah. And I guess it's that, going back to that cyclical bit where the market is at right now, if there was a pullback, and there will be a pullback at some stage, we just don't know when and how big and all the rest of it, but as Kiwis are just getting back into this, we don't really want to get too freaked out too easily.
Yeah, that would be my personal concern, is that people get spooked and get put off by these things. But obviously, the education piece is there now where it wasn't previously.
True.
You know, the conversations around the dinner table, people are far more understanding that that's actually an opportunity to buy. You know, those that are out there that are looking to accumulate and build up their future savings, they're starting to understand that that just means that, hey,
it's on sale.
Apples are on sale. Yeah. So. Yeah. I think that educational piece supporting that has kind of changed that. So hopefully our mindset is more prepared for long-term investing.
Correct, yeah.
And as we talked about earlier, that shift away from the 80s of stock picking and hot tips towards long-term investing rather than speculation.
Correct.
I think we've seen that evolve a lot. So
That's a big year. It's a real year.
And I think that just reinforces that we're now investing rather than speculating.
You're absolutely right, because before it was like, I heard that this company is just going to go off and we're just going to load up on that and bet the house on it or whatever, right? That's in our DNA, right? Like, that's just kind of how some of us think. And so we learn it. What's that?
We are greedy.
We're greedy. Yeah. Well, it's either fear or greed.
Yeah.
It's one of those two emotions that will drive us. Yeah. So you got to be really honest about what you're feeling when you're bringing that to the capital market.
And there are so many stories of this, right? It's the big fish story, and we all choose to forget those little negative stories, and we think we're probably better than we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I think that's evolved, and we are taking a more investing mindset now and thinking about long term.
That's right. Yeah, it is, and it's this whole interdependence piece as well, right? Where I guess to a certain extent, Kiwis probably don't like to put themselves out there into the market because they don't want to get beaten up again.
For many of us, we were told quite horrific stories about investing in the capital markets because of the speculative approach that previous investors were taking rather than the investing
Our
mindset.
Parents.
Yeah, it did put a number of people off investing in the capital markets for a very long period of time because they were constantly told it is just a wild west, it is just a gamble and you're just punting rather than investing.
Yeah.
So that has washed through now, and obviously with continued growth of KiwiSaver, the awareness is going to grow, and we'll hopefully have Kiwis set up for a more financially literate and prosperous future.
All right. Dean Anderson for Prime Minister.
What year is it?
Yeah, 2020, I think, right?
2020.
Yeah, it's coming up soon. So what political party would you join, Dean? No, how's that for a controversial question, which I'm not going to ask?
And we'll cut that one.
That's right. Okay, no, that's cool. Now, before we go, if you were to sit in front of first-time investors, what would you say to them? You've kind of given us a clue already, but what would you say to them as some like key things to really remember if you're starting to try to grow some wealth using your platform or investing in any other way? What would you say to them?
First and foremost, you've got to start asking some of those key questions. Really understand how comfortable you are with risk and what are you trying to achieve? What's your goal? So that really comes down to, when do you need the money that we talked about?
Yeah.
So if you've got that long-term investment horizon and you're thinking long-term, then get started. Yeah. It's just as simple as that. Get out there, start investing, and just keep doing your research, reading great blogs like ours.
Yeah. Subscribe to great podcasts like ours.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the other thing is when things change, when you hear stuff, don't freak out, right? Because that's going to be
ignore the headlines. You know, the interesting thing with successful investing actually is it's kind of the opposite of everything we're taught in life. You know, you're typically grilled in terms of the harder you work, the better the outcome. No matter what it is in your life. Equally, we're often reminded that the more you pay, the better. We have these associations with the more expensive something is, the better it is, and the harder we work, the better the outcome's going to be. Where investing, it actually is pretty much the opposite. You really just want to set and forget and not look at it, be it set up a regular investment plan or put a lump sum in and just forget about it. Don't get panicked by the headlines or gossip from a friend. Just continue to do what you're doing. And like I say, the least amount of time that you spend touching it and looking at, probably the better.
That's what I say to my boys. Like, don't fiddle with it, right?
Yeah.
Just don't touch it, because you're going to get into trouble eventually.
Correct. Yeah. And that just comes back on that robo thing quickly, is that, you know, same thing. You still got that advice, but if you've got that access and control, that is a little bit of a risk.
Yeah. Those are two really, really important things, I think, just to... I totally agree with that. You know, like the harder you work, the more you pay.
Yeah.
It's almost upside down. I get
correct.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the more I learn about this, the more that seems to be true, is that you set your course. It's way the hell in the distance. You can barely see it, but you know that that's what you're aiming for.
Yeah.
Don't get distracted by the waves that come, and don't try to work your way there, because it's going to take a while, right? It's a marathon,
a
sprint.
You're going to make the wrong decisions at the wrong time or spend too much in fees and transaction costs and all those other things that come into play.
Interesting. On that, Dean, how about we finish up on that for today?
Perfect.
And we'll catch up with you maybe in a year's time
and
see how Colonel's going. But I wanted to, you know, thank you very much for coming on the show. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Darcy.
Fairly short notice, I think. I think I reached out to you maybe only a couple of weeks ago, so thank
you. Yeah, we've probably been live a day. So we're now live.
I jumped on you right away. Sorry about that.
That's great.
All this attention all of a sudden, right? It's not going to your head, obviously. That's good.
No, we're pretty focused on... continue to build out the Colonel offering, and we've just been really excited by the feedback that we've had from our customers to date. It's exciting to see, you know, what they're getting out of it, and that we're obviously helping them achieve their goals, which is always rewarding for
us. That's what it's all about. So if people want to find out a little bit more about Colonel, where do they go?
Yeah, so colonelwealth.co.nz. Just search Colonel and you'll find us there, and feel free to get in touch at any time.
Excellent. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes so that if people are listening to this right now and they want to actually have a crack at it, just click on that link, go straight through to you guys, and we'll go from there.
Perfect. Thanks, Darcy.
Sweet. All right. Thanks, Dean. So thanks again for listening in to the NZ Everyday Investor. And if you haven't done so already, make sure that you have hit the subscribe button on your app, whether it's on Google or on Apple. Make sure that you've subscribed to the show. Now, there's some benefits to listening to the NZ Everyday Investor. Number one, you're going to hear some perspectives which are not influenced by mainstream media. Not that there's anything wrong with the mainstream media, but it's good to have a balanced, diversified diet of information. Yep, there's some opinion. There's somebody that's hosting it that doesn't know everything, but I think that's actually a really good thing, don't you think? Do you think it's good to actually listen to people who are learning or people who are already of the opinion that they're an expert? I'll let you be the judge on that one. But there is a benefit to listening to the show in that hopefully it will help increase your financial literacy levels, just like what these digital platforms are doing, like Colonel Wealth, like Sharesies, like Hatch, like InvestNow. These platforms are out there doing good, even though some people might not be actually putting money through them. Just the fact that you can actually set up an account and learn some stuff for free is good. It's doing good stuff. Digitization will make things easier. But it will also make things easier for people to get out as well. So we have to be aware of that when the next cycle comes to an end and there's a little bit of a pullback. Are we all going to panic and all this new money is going to exit as fast as it came in? Hopefully not. Hopefully we can actually anchor ourselves to these long-term goals that we've set. Hopefully we'll be aware enough to know that markets do go up and down and that we're in it for the long term. We're trying to create wealth, which doesn't happen in the short term. So there you go. Investing is different from trading. And if we can keep a long-term perspective on this, we'll all do well. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And again, make sure that you've subscribed. Check us out also on YouTube. We did some video footage of this podcast. And if you have YouTube installed on your phone, you'll get on there, search for The Everyday Investor, subscribe to it so that you can get some of the video content that we're putting out there also. Thanks for listening in. Catch you next time around. I hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, then I'd encourage you to visit the show notes on your podcast player. And while you're there, sign up to our newsletter. If you're keen to see how good looking we are in real life, we're also on YouTube. Just search for The Everyday Investor. I hope that what you heard today will somehow encourage you to build real and lasting wealth in your world. But do remember to seek your own advice before acting on any of the material covered today. Catch you next time.